Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo! This is your boy, the Tornado. It's your name, Ben McHale.
And we have a fabulous show for you tonight. We're bringing back an old, old friend, though he's actually pretty young compared to us. Matt Yanofsky, who represents Knockout Publicity, sends me some good stories every now and then about some of his fighters. We just had Joey Abel, one of his guys, on the show last week, so... he's going to be a great interview. And we also have Tarvis Sims, a professional boxer, who's got a pretty storied record and career. He was undefeated for a while, and as Tony just reminded me, he moved up two weight classes to have his only loss in a big step up. I think it was in the Super 6 tournament, right?
Tarvis wasn't in the Super 6. I'm trying to say, I always get him and his twin brother confused, because you get Tarvis and Travis, and that always... uses the hell out of me.
Well,
we'll
find out from Matt, because he's one of Matt's guys too. And,
right. I remember.
Blog up.
Yeah, I remember one of the Sims brothers had the junior middleweight title,
right,
and lost it in an upset. And then I think one of them fought in like Alan Green or somebody. I have to really look it up. I'm just getting back to my computer now. I literally just got in from dinner, and I'm doing the show. See, multitasking. Doing the show tonight while packing for Chi-Town tomorrow. Most people think I'm just going for the Phillies Cubs game this weekend, but I got a threefold trip, Rich. One is I'm going to a Phillies-Cubs game, which is always one of the few Wrigley Field, and it's going to be kind of cool.
Before you get too far in baseball, did you know who won the home run derby the other night? Did you see that?
Yeah, Big Crappy.
Big Crap? What?
Yeah, he can still hit one of the guys underhand and lob him to him. What happened when he came up, with the game on the line? He did absolutely nothing.
Well, no, that's because he couldn't run.
He got thrown out, that's right. Forgot about that. Because he's fat.
He went from hero to goat in a heartbeat. Poor guy. Continue.
So, but, yeah, I got a three-fold trip out to Chicago. One is I'm going to a Phillies-Cubs game, which should be a lot of fun. I get to see Wrigley Park. I get to have a little bit of fun out there, try some deep-dish pizza and all that. Two is I'm going to this old Italian place out there, because you might not know, but I'm Italian. It's like Rocky Balboa. And they do a roast beef sandwich, and they dip it back in the juice. It looks really good. They put some hot peppers on it, so I'm going to try that. And third of all, I'm going to slap the shit out of any Blackhawk fans that I see just because they have what should be the Flyer Stanley Cup this year. I'm not happy about it.
All right, well, don't publish that too widely. Anyway, talking about...
Say what I want. You know me.
Talking about screwing people up, I just want to mention my newest website that I created last night, and it's called Scarlet Lawyer. .com. And basically, it's going to be a nice dedicated forum to allow people to go on there and nominate lawyers for Scarlet Lawyer status. If your lawyer really sucked and screwed your case up, you paid him a lot of money and he's ruined everything, or if you know of a lawyer that's working for somebody that's just really screwing people over and just deserves to be nominated, tell your story on the forums, and we'll put their face right on the main page, the front page of the site. And we're going to keep that up. We're going to develop it. It's going to be like a new brand. And I know complaintsboard.com has like a nice setup where you can actually like lodge complaints about anything. So eventually I want to get into like an interface like that. But this has been the plan of mine forever, but this one lawyer that became the number one inspiration over the last few days, he made me just go into action. He was just that dumb, and he just provoked me that much that I just had to do it. So I did it, and I made him the number one lawyer on the Scarlet Lawyer page, even though he's probably the most small-time guy among the top three there that I've personally dealt with in the past. But this guy, he just you read the description, and that's all I'm going to say for now. But I bring the whole legal thing up, too, because there's no confidentiality agreement in place, and I haven't been asked to be quiet about it, so I'm just going to go out and say that there has been a tentative settlement finally reached with the estate, and it's six figures, so it'll take care of me in the long run. It might take a while to get it all, but I think that's going to work out, so I'll have time to work on this guy who's number one, and the other guy who's number two, that's still an appeal, so... my legal clerk career is doing pretty well in addition to the website, which right off the bat, before we get to any boxing or anything, I want to get to the traffic report. Like, we're doing a morning show. And,
I saw that.
I had the pleasure of switching to a new server, and we have seen some tremendous results from just the little things I've been doing that I haven't been able to do because we haven't been able to grow the site because of our old server. Anyway, to make a long story short, we are now averaging 76,857 hits a day for the month of July.
Awesome.
And a total of over 1 million hits for the month. 1,152. That's according to yesterday's figures. That doesn't include today. Pretty impressive. I think our biggest hit day was 122,000 hits. And it's surprising, the countries of origin of where people come to our website. It's funny. The top three are U.S. commercial, which I don't know whether that means like commercial companies providing internet service or people at work accessing our site. Because that would be troubling if it's just people at work. That's 841,000 of our hits comes from U.S. commercial. So I'm just assuming that's just all over the U.S. The number two spot is network. I don't know. I guess that could be anywhere. And then, of course, number three is unresolved, unknown. That is truly anywhere. And then the fourth spot is held down by nonprofit organizations. So I guess that's good. You know, we've got a pretty healthy following from nonprofit people. But the fifth, sixth, and seventh slots I want to make into a little trivia contest here. And these are the three countries, other than the U.S. and all these other categories there, that are our top three other countries. And I'm even going to give a big clue. I'm going to say the initials are GNC for these top three big countries. And if you can name these three countries that give us our most traffic this month, then we'll give you some energy product. You just send us an email after you call into the show, and we'll give you we'll send you out by mail some energy products. You know, who knows? Could be a case of cocaine. Anyway, the call-in number, if you want to answer that question, let's see, is 1-347-324-3228. That's 1-347-324-3228. And we'll keep an eye out on the phones, and I'll mention it later, too. The top three countries, GNC. And if nobody calls in, we'll make Tony guess later.
You know, I already have a guess.
No, well, we can't spoil it. What if you're right? All right. We'll save it for later.
Okay.
Anyway, we're going to go to the boxing schedule here for the week before we get Yano on. I don't even know if I told him to send me his number. He still hasn't done it yet. He's on in freaking 15 minutes. Great, Yano. Anyway, let's go to BoxRec, see what we got going on in the world of boxing. Do we have any big boxing matches last weekend that I missed? Oh, yes. We got a fight we don't really probably want to talk about, but hey. Our boy Hank Lundy had his first awful defeat in a fight that he was winning, hands down.
He was winning, but he was not fighting smart. Now, and you've heard me talk before. We interviewed Hank about 2 years ago. I really like Hank. You know, he's a good kid. He's tough. You know, he is a good representation of what the sport should be. He ducks no one. You know, he comes out there. He plays a role. You know, he's always in shape. But I saw something from the beginning of that fight, I'm going to say from maybe the third round on, that progressively was getting worse. If you go back to that fight and you watch it again, he was boxing southpaw in the beginning. He's a natural left-hander. And he was really snapping his jab out hard. And he was hitting Molina right in the face fist. He was, you know, and then he was landing left hands. But they were more like sharp, but not, he wasn't really sitting down on them. You know, he was kind of leaning a little bit. But he was landing the shots. He was doing, you know, very well. And then he really started to get just a little bit ahead of himself. And I know a lot of these guys today, like a lot of these young fighters that have good skills. Who's the guy today they want to emulate? Floyd Mayweather Jr. Back in the 90s, you had a lot of guys wanting to emulate Roy Jones. If you're not Roy Jones, don't emulate him. Guys back in the 60s and the 70s, who they want to imitate? Muhammad Ali. If you're not Ali, don't try to do what he does because you can't do it. I mean, that's like, you take a guy like me, short, you know, stockier type of fighter, good power, good left hook. Who are guys that I more want to imitate? Guys like Marciano, guys like Joe Frazier, aggressive pressure fighters. But I had a little bit. I was somewhat of a decent boxer too when I used my jab. Just I was better fighting on the inside, so I could box a little bit from the outside, and I use quick shifts and throw some left hooks in there, you know, and then get out. So I was almost like. I kind of say it because he's always a fighter that I always emulated. I consider myself kind of a cross between Marciano, Frazier, and Vinny Paz. Okay? Because I could box a little bit like Vinny Paz.
That's a pretty big shoes to fill there, buddy. You got any world championships to back that up?
Shut your mouth, Frazier. I beat Michael Jordan. You didn't.
Oh, jeez.
I beat Jesse Baum, too.
Jordan. Fist fight, I think.
I beat Jesse Baum, too. Twice, I just didn't get the decision both times. But, no, going back to that, I mean, that's the thing I was saying was, you know, those are things that I could never even think about doing stuff like Roy Jones used to do with, like, a hands behind the back and throwing punches. So I've got, like, if no matter how much you love Floyd Mayweather, if you're not him, don't do what he tried to do.
But why do I hear that? What's going on there?
Well, you hear what?
Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather fight is dead. Somebody wrote that.
Dude, I told you 2 weeks ago it was never going to happen.
Yeah. So what does that mean for boxing? Is it over? Everybody's trying
is boxing
to...
over?
Yeah, is it dead?
No, boxing's not over. Boxing's not over.
Prove it.
So it's just taking a blow, obviously, with this fight not happening, but by no means over.
Right.
We just got to get, like, you know, somebody else right now that's going to come out and wow everybody. Like, the thing is, Mayweather has fantastic skills, but he is.
Yeah, they
the thing about Floyd is.
Possibly build.
Well, the thing about Floyd is, like, he is a cautious risk taker. Like, he'll take fights, they always got to be on his own terms.
Right.
And he actually kind of reminds me of what Roy Jones was back in the 90s. A guy that was phenomenally talented, but he was always so afraid something happened to his legacy that he would ask for so many demands. And a lot of times fights didn't happen because of that. And they always had to happen on his terms.
To spend some of his money, too, you know. Probably wants to take some time off. He just made a shitload of money with all those little fights.
Yeah, that's true. But you gotta get a guy that's...
Gotta have his Twitter freaking scavenger hunts, you know? Gotta be all about it.
Well, boxing needs now. Boxing needs a guy that's going to be so fearless out there that, I mean, no will take anybody, anytime.
Mike Tyson have a Twitter scavenger hunt? I don't fucking think so, right?
But, I mean, I want you to look back at this. Like, some of the guys over the past, I'm just going to go back 25 years that have really captured people. They were guys that everybody wanted to see. And I'm going to take a guy like Sugar Ray Leonard. Sugar Ray Leonard, ultimate risk taker. Taking fights with Duran in his prime, taking fights with undefeated Tommy Rams. I mean, how often would you see a Leonard Hearns fight, you know, in, like, today's market? No, you wouldn't. So, I mean, that was a guy like Sugar Ray. Sugar Ray was afraid to take on nobody. He was taking on world champions getting ready for super fights, which is kind of cool. So you look at that. You look at a guy like Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was getting ready to fight Michael Spinks, and he had already unified the titles, but he's getting ready for this fight with Spinks. He had just knocked out Larry Holmes. I mean, knocked Holmes out cold in 4 rounds. And that was in January. The fight with Spinks is going to be in June. Normally, a fighter, or the heavyweight champion of the world, or a top, you know, main event, pay-per-view type fighter, is not going to get in the ring after knocking out Holmes and before fighting Spinks in a 6-month span. Tyson had a mandatory title defense with Tony Tubbs. He's like, fuck it. I'll just take it in March in Japan. Blows Tubbs out in about a round and a half. Boom. Knocks him out with one punch. Leaves him bloody on the mat. It was unbelievable. That's what he was like, fearless at the time. He was like, you know what? Yeah, I got a major mega title fight coming up. Doesn't matter. I'll take a tune-up fight against the number one contender and a former world champion. That's what the guy did. Even Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya was taking tune-ups, getting ready for guys like Parnell Whitaker and Julio Cesar Chavez. He was getting ready for these mega fights by taking tune-ups against guys like, what was his name, Juan Rivera, who was a very accomplished fighter. He took a tune-up fight with Hector Camacho. Slapped the shit out of him. I loved every second of it.
Right. That's nice.
That fight was on my 21st birthday, by the way. I could have watched it live, but I was out getting drunk at a strip bar.
Well, we're going to start the boxing matches of the week after Tony's rant there. Very good rant.
Well, but the one thing I want to say, we got on the tangent with you sometimes when I get hyper. But about the Lundy fight, he was boxing well.
Rain Man rant.
Yeah, the Rain Man rant. But, I mean, Hank was boxing great early, but he stopped using his jab. And then he started just doing, you know, he was trying to do too many Floyd cocky Mayweather moves. And he's not Floyd. If you're not Floyd, don't do his move. And that's why, you know,
aggressive one. I think he stepped forward a lot more, and he established his presence. He didn't really go for the knockout when he could have, you know, but I think that was out of respect for the guy than anything else. So
yeah, but that was, the thing is, but look at that. Go back to that Mayweather-Mosley fight. Yeah, Mayweather got a little bit more aggressive than normal. Yeah, he took those two big punches and got stunned in the second round. But you know what? He knew how to come back from it. The other thing was, yeah, he got more aggressive. He took more risks, but they were calculated risks. At no point, even though he was getting more aggressive, at no point in that fight again was he in any danger because he was controlling the tempo. Hammer and Hank was, when he was controlling the tempo, and he was doing fine, but he was making mistakes that Floyd wouldn't make. If you're not Floyd, don't try to be him. That's why he got hurt in the eighth. Then the biggest mistake he made, which you could tell by the 10th and the 11th, he really had nothing left and he was trying to hold on. So that's why he was taking like real deliberate clinches so the referee would break him and admonish him. That way to give him a few more seconds. Then he actually tried to steal a move from Vinny Paz, who was in the front row, by holding on to the ropes. Well, Vinny used to do that all the time. But the thing is, Vinny always held the top rope. So even though his hand was somewhat down, it wasn't down by his ass.
Right.
When Hank did it, he grabbed the second rope. His hand was down almost like lower than his waistline. And he got clocked with two left hooks, and that was the beginning of the end. Yeah. If you're not Floyd and you're not Vinny Paz,
he had a hell of a lot of experience. So.
It was a good experience. I mean, hopefully it's something he learns from. Hopefully it doesn't break him. Hopefully it makes him focus and, you know, learn.
Right. Well, anyway, I haven't even seen the fight, you know. I was sorry to hear it that he lost, and of course,
I got back in the baseball game that night, about 1 in the morning. I had DVR'd it, so I watched it at, you know, 1 something in the morning, just like it was live.
Right.
I was watching, I was like, and I just had the bad feeling as every round was going on, I'm like, you know, this is getting progressively worse.
Right. Well, anyway, tons of boxing to get through here before we get a call into Matt. So, upcoming fights. We got a big one coming up in Germany at the Sport and Congress Center in Schwerin, Germany. Don't be Schwerin and Schwerin. We have a light heavyweight fight at the top of the card. 36-2, 29 knockouts. Jürgen Bremer versus Alejandro Lacatos, who is 31-5 with 23 knockouts for the WBO light heavyweight title. Then we have a 12-round cruiserweight fight between Alexander Alexeyev, who's 19-1 with 17 knockouts, fighting Denis Lebedev, who's 20-0 with 15 knockouts. And next we have, looks like one of the most interesting female fights we've seen in a while, even though it's at flyweight. We have a 10x2 flyweight fight between Suzy Kentikian, who's 27-0 as a female fighter with 16 knockouts. And she's fighting Aralee Musino, who's 10-0 with 6 knockouts, 1 draw. And this is for the WIBF, Women's International Boxing Federation flyweight title, and the WBA female flyweight title, as well as the WBO female flyweight title. So it's a pretty big female fight going on over in Germany, and it seems like all the big female fights do happen overseas. I don't know what happened to female boxing in the United States, but we might have to go back to Ken Shamrock and John Scully to figure that one out. Well, we have a big fight in Mexico as well on Saturday. Bob Arum from Top Rank has this fight going on in Tuxtla Gutierrez, Chiapas, Mexico. I probably just butchered all that. Anyway, the main event is Fernando Montiel versus Rafael Concepcion at bantamweight, and it's for the WBC bantamweight title and the WBO bantamweight title. And Montiel's 43-2, 2 draws, and 32 knockouts. Concepcion is 14-4 with 8 knockouts and 1 draw. So it's a pretty interesting fight. Then we go to this is a good one. This is what I was laughing about when you're trying to talk seriously about Hank. We got to go to the Philippines, to Bohol, Philippines, at the Carlos P. Garcia Football Stadium on Saturday. And the main event is a 12-round bantamweight fight between A.J. Bernal, who's 21-1 with 17 knockouts, 1 draw, and Big U. Did you know Big U fought? Big U, B-I-G-Y-O-O, Big U, 16-2 with 11 knockouts. fighting for the WBO Asia Pacific bantamweight title. So Big U. That's a good fight name. I like that. I wonder if he comes out to Big U Smalls. Anyway, we also have a really big heavyweight fight in Atlantic City, New Jersey, at the Tropicana Hotel and Casino between David Tua, who's 51-3 with 43 knockouts, one draw, fighting Monty Barrett, one of the
top boxers. Tua should come out relatively quickly.
And
Barrett,
he's become like the latest greatest opponent, you know. He's like the yardstick for a lot of these heavyweight champions coming up. You know, if they beat him, they'll be all right. But he's been in the mix the last few years. He hasn't really taken much time off, and you know, he's had a few losses in a row, but he's had a couple wins in a row too, here and there. So it's not a done deal, I don't think. It's pretty likely Tua is going to win, but I don't think it's going to be that quick. We'll see. His last three losses were to David Hay, Odlanir Solif, and Alexander Ustinov. Two of those guys were undefeated, and David Hay had one loss at the time. And they were two of them were knockouts and one unanimous decision. Before that, he had three knockout wins in a row against pretty good guys, Ty Fields, Damon Reed, and Cliff Towser. But, you know, not world beaters, I guess. 41-1, Ty Fields, that was the best guy, I guess. He knocked him out in round one. Damon Reed was 43-12 when he fought him. So, he's not a pushover, I don't think, but he could be past his prime just a little bit. And David Tua is not really a spring chicken either, so.
What? Punch never loses your punch.
Right. And he has had, let's see, since his draw with Haseem Rahman.
Dude, that fight was bullshit. He should have won that fight 8 rounds before I was there in Philadelphia.
He's had 9 wins in a row. His last win was against Friday Ahu Nanya.
Friday's the 13th, and you want to.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm betting on Tua. Anyway. We have a whole bunch of other fights going on across the land. I don't know why the name thing isn't working on BoxRec. Screwed me up here. Anyway. Let's check what else we got. We have a pretty big fight on Saturday on HBO. Welterweight Timothy Bradley, undefeated at 25-0, fighting Luis Carlos Abreu, who's also undefeated, 29-0, with 23 knockouts. Bradley has 11. And then we have a guy, Joaquin Alcine. I think I've seen him fight a couple times. He's all right. This is 32-1 with 19 knockouts. And he's fighting Alfredo Angulo, who I actually believe, I think I've been on a conference call with him. He's like the guy who was born in the jungle. He's like one of the most interesting phone calls I've ever been on, because he started talking about like when he was in the jungle growing up, you know, on his own. He was just like a freaking monkey, you know, stealing from people's yards and stuff, just a total like stray person in the jungles of Venezuela or wherever. I think, yeah, he's from Venezuela. So quite an interesting character. So I know both. I know I've seen both of those guys in action and interviewed one of them. So that should be an interesting fight. His nationality is Mexico. Maybe that's not him. Anyway. Interesting guy. If it is. And Joaquin Alcine actually fought Travis Sims back in 2007 when he was 25.
That's the one who beat Travis Sims, right?
He beat him, yeah, when he was 25-0.
Okay, I was getting Travis and Tarvis confused. I'm sorry.
That's the fight I saw, I think. Maybe I was confused, too. Anyway, I definitely heard of Tarvis, of course. Let's see what else we got. Yeah. Johnny Tapia is fighting Frankie Archuleta in Mexico.
See, this is the fourth time they fought.
Tapia is 57-5, two draws, 29 knockouts. Archuleta is 26-7 with 14.
Yeah, you know what's scary? This is what's actually scary. Now, Johnny Tapia has 5 losses on his record, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. You know, the guy's, you know, in his 40s, he's been fighting forever. But the thing is, the guy's been declared clinically dead. 4 times have he had losses?
Yeah. They fought at least twice before. Yeah, twice before. So this
congratulations.
Is a trilogy.
You won.
And won again.
Nice.
All right.
I love winning.
Congratulations. You won. Let's see what else we got. So.
$150 in a lottery ticket. Does that count?
No. Oh, have you ever heard of the OPBF light welterweight title?
The what?
The OPBF. The OPPP. Tuesday, our last fight here in boxing before we get Yano on the phone. Whatever is it? Oh, we got it. We got his number. Yay. We have, one more fight to talk about, and we'll get Yano on the phone. We have Randy Switko, 29-5 with 25 knockouts and 1 draw, at light welterweight, fighting Motoki Sasaki, who is 33-8 with 1 draw and 21 knockouts, and they're fighting for the OPBF light welterweight title on Tuesday in Tokyo. So, if you happen to be in Tokyo, might be a good fight to watch for you. And then Wednesday, actually, sorry, I lied about the being the last one. We have a pretty interesting cruiserweight fight down in Australia between Danny Green, 29-3 with 26 knockouts, and Paul Briggs, 26-3 with 8.
Fight. I mean, Briggs had 2 very bloody fights with Thomas Adamack.
Yeah.
Danny Green, even though what he did in his, I guess, I don't know if it was his last fight. Now he might have.
I predicted one of those fights. Back in the day when I used to do predictions with Adam Eck. Also,
the question is, did you predict Danny Green knocking out Roy Jones in 48 seconds or something like that?
No. But Shane Cameron is fighting as well on that card at heavyweight, 24-2 with 20 knockouts, fighting Daniel Amon, who's 19-3 with 1 draw and 4 knockouts. And that truly is it for the week. Ahead in boxing. We'll get to the MMA later. And let's get Matt Yanofsky on the phone. And he wanted us to call us calling at 8:30 sharp. We're freaking 4 minutes late. He's going to be pissed.
Oh my God.
You know how he values his time, you know? He talks so fast because every second.
Yes, he does. He's easily more caffeinated than I am.
So we're going to add him to the conference. Get Matt on the phone before he flips out. He lost his 5 minutes of fame already. And I guess Tarvis is a hopeful, not a definite, quite yet.
Hello?
Texted. Matt!
What's going on, Rich?
How you doing?
Everything's good, my man. I haven't heard from you in a while. And it's not that I did not want to come on your show last week. I heard that. I got a little bit upset. You got Tony Tanaka on with you?
Of course.
Oh, what are you doing, man? What's up, Tony? Now, I heard that story last week that had me laughing. I remember that. And I told you, I saw that kid, Alexander, in the dressing room or warming up or whatnot, and I said he's going to beat this guy from Philly. And I remember Rich Clark was telling me that this guy from Philly, you know, is his next great fighter. You know, he's going to knock this guy out in 1 round. And I remember it was a terrific fight that night. The guy from Philly, named Moises Calderon, lost that night.
Yep.
And never fought again. So that's a good memory of meeting Tony Tanaka.
Well, he was 0-1, and he was 0-0 coming in, and he left 0-1, and he got locked in that show. I remember you walked up to that. I'm like, where you going? I think I'm going to sign this kid, man.
Well, first of all, I want to give my heartfelt condolences for old Georgie there. Sorry, he passed away the other day, and I know you must be devastated.
I thought you'd be devastated.
What?
I mean, of course, in some ways, condolences, I feel bad, but I'm not a Yankee fan. Just because, you know, I'm a Yankee from up north doesn't mean make me a Yankee fan.
he's trying to get some Red Sox guy over here. Anyway,
Rich, I thought you'd be more upset than anybody.
No. I don't dance on anybody's grave or anything. You know, he's a good guy. He did a lot for the sport. He spent a lot of money on a lot of good players. So.
He spent a lot of money. Hey, he makes things entertaining, you know. Talked a lot of trash. It was fun.
I just loved it when I saw the article that I just sent you today where they compared George Steinbrenner to Dana White, like he's going to take over for him.
I didn't get a chance to read that, but I heard.
Yeah.
You know what? That's inaccurate, and I'll tell you why. Because UFC fighters are underpaid. You look at all these pay-per-view numbers they do, and these guys aren't getting paid much. The Ferreira brothers who run the UFC, they're pocketing the money. So George Steinbrenner paid guys a lot of money, and he overpaid. God bless his soul. And I'll say it, and I've said it before. UFC fighters are underpaid. Do the
math. That's true.
Yes, that's, they are.
That's true. I just had a nice interview with Matt Lindland, who's the old-school UFC guy who's done his own thing since then. And he knows a lot about the sport, and he's a big boxing fan, too. And, you know, he even admitted that the boxers are getting paid way more than the MMA fighters. And it is kind of interesting to see some of the paydays and wonder, you know, how does a guy even afford to train on that kind of budget? I mean, basically, they have to live on their sponsors. They can't live on the fighter purses.
Exactly. You know, I did an interview recently with Sergio Mora, you know, and I've always wanted to ask someone this for years. I said, hey, Sergio, you know, you're on the contender. That show was around for 4 years. Most of the ratings tanked and everything. And, you know, the Ultimate Fighter's been around for 11 years and it's doing well with ratings. I said, why do you think that is? And he kind of said, well, use it. He said, the fighters are paid nothing. You know, and they just got to hope to make to UFC and it's a little bit different. So that's kind of a good point. Those guys are definitely underpaid. You know, you talk about that Brock Lesnar fight. I'm sure that did over 1 million pay-per-view buys. I actually went out to watch it. You know, and I know Brock's the big cash cow in the UFC now, but I mean, I really don't think he got paid that much at all compared to what boxers would make up those 1 million pay-per-view buys, even though
it's
cheaper. There's still a lot of money out there.
$400,000 is what I heard he got paid.
I was saying the same thing last week. You look at that Mayweather-Usman fight, and, you know, how much do those guys get? You know, Mayweather made over $10 million in that fight. And
there's guys on HBO that make $2 million. You know, it's unbelievable. Calzaghe and Bernard Hopkins both made about $2 million, and that was on HBO without any pay-per-view rights or anything. So.
The internet kind of screws things up, I think, because you got so many people on the internet, you know, they got these blogs that don't know what they're talking about, and they keep coming out with these stories that are saying boxing is dead, but they never confront that issue that boxers pay more, you know? They never really address that and try to get to the why of it. And the fajitas are worth billions of dollars.
Right. And that's absolutely true, but one thing I'll play devil's advocate, you know, one thing that MMA has, they have a league. Everyone fights each other. You know, there's no ducking this guy over this and that, and there's no sanctioning bodies running around, you know, creating the silver championship and the I don't feel like keeping a champion too long if he's not going to pay me, so I'll have an interim champion. They don't do all that stuff. They have one champion, and if there's an interim champion, it's legitimate. You really know who the guy is. You know, boxing fans are confused. You know, you look at the WBC. They have three champions in one weight class. You know, so if a guy defended his title 10 times, they don't think he's going to fight as much. They'll just make another champion to make more money. The sanctioning bodies are a big part of the problem, and the promoters are feeding into it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right on that, because I said that on the show before. I'm like, when I started getting into boxing when I was a good kind of teenager, 85 years ago, when Jack Johnson was still fighting, it feels like, I said, I could tell you, and this is just, when I started getting into it, that's when it was like the WBA, the WBC, the IBF, that's it. But I could tell you almost every champion in every weight class. And now it's like, you say, who's the WBA junior middleweight champion? I'm like, oh, shit, who the hell is it?
I can open it up Ring Magazine, you know, and having the top 10 list, and it was just, you know, that was it, of every weight class. You know, that was the thing that I looked at all the time. You know, I wanted to see who was freaking paperweight champion all the way up to who was heavyweight champion. And it was all there in Ring Magazine when I was growing up in the 80s, so. You know, you don't see that anymore, and it's, of course, you got all the heavyweight guys that are the best in the world that are overseas now. So it's kind of unfortunate, but the problem is people see through things through United States colored glasses, I think, with the MMA versus boxing debate. And it's like they think because in the United States it seems like MMA is taking off and boxing is not, that means it's that way all over the world. But they forget as well that it's a Mexican sport, it's a European sport, it's everywhere in the world.
And MMA is not. It's not even approved in some countries, in some states in the United States. But they act like it's, you know, everywhere, and it's taken over. And it's like all these people are so uneducated because they don't look at the actual facts that show that it's not. It's not a worldwide sport. It's not a business that's established and entrenched as boxing. I mean, you know, from being on the publicity side, that it's just, it's been around for so long. There's so much history, and it's all about the people in the sport, and that's what they do. They make sure that you know about the people in the sport, because I get so much more press releases and emails about boxers every day, and it's not by design. It's just because there's so much more boxing going on in the world, and there's so many more boxers out there to talk about.
Well, absolutely. You know, boxing is an older sport, and obviously, you know, you talk about the fact that it's all over the world. I mean, MMA, I know, is big in Japan. They have K-1. You know, and all the other leagues over there, Pride, and whatnot. But the thing about boxing is, you know, as much as we love the sport and as much as I'll defend it to the death, as I did against Tom Molesky a couple of years ago, I tell you guys know that. You know, the thing about boxing is a lot of people in the sport are digging their own grave. You know, they're doing things that are upsetting fans. Judges are ruining fights. You know, they're putting things on pay-per-view that would barely make ESPN, and it's just stuff that's upsetting the fans. You know, all the promoters, one thing I would like to see, there's something called the Boxing Promoters Association. If you ever get emails from them, you know, basically what they are is a group of promoters that meet together to try to better the sport. One thing that would better the sport, you know, and stop confusing fans would be to freeze out, you know, fake titles. Because at the end of the day, if every promoter says to, you know, what's that?
That's what John Scully said, too, in his portion of
it. Yeah, yeah. If every promoter every promoter met together, you know, they said, we're not going to make interim titles. We're not dealing with it, then the sanctioning bodies would be out of business. You know, and the promoters, as crazy may sound, the Boxing Promoters Association can create their own title, or everyone could just realize that the Ring Magazine title would be for it. And I always say, you know, if I'm a promoter and I want my fighters to make the most money, if these titles mean nothing, I'll just create my own title. I'll buy it from Title Boxing Magazine. I'll pay $150 for it, and you know, the fighters can keep their money. Because I don't feel like these sanctioning bodies deserve, you know, these sanctioning fees, because titles mean nothing. And as much as I dislike him personally, I respect Floyd Mayweather for saying, no thank you, WBA. I don't need your title. I'm not going to pay a percentage of my purse to you. And the WBA complained about it because they didn't get a sanctioning fee. You know what? A big fight like that, and a lot of these fights are much more than a title. And that's why, you know, some of these sanctioning bodies have to have these false champions and stuff like this, just to stay in business. And stuff like that, as much as they don't think it does, it confuses fans and it upsets people in the sport.
It does. One thing I always say, and remember USA's Tuesday Night Fights?
Cool.
I mean, I used to love USA's Tuesday Night Fights. I mean, I would play my whole week around USA's Tuesday Night Fights. And I remember when they went off the air, I videotaped that show from the Blue Horizon. And then they did a music video at the end with some highlights and everything. Well, I had it on tape, so I just put it on YouTube for fun. And people were commenting on it and saying, man, I wish, you know, else will pick up Tuesday Night Fights. I'm like, well, it's 12 years later, you know, it's obviously not going to happen. But what really pisses me off more than anything was I don't like the way ESPN does their coverage of boxing anymore. Back in the 80s and all that, ESPN was a prime, boxing was a prime sport on ESPN. Now what happens is you have the Friday Night Fights, which I love. You know, you get the best in the studio, you got some good fights on there, but the problem is, they do a hiatus from, like, September to January. So in January, it starts back up again. It's like you're not conditioned to be watching. You're like, oh, my God, the fights are back on. You've already missed the first 2 weeks. The other thing is it switched the times around. 1 week, it's going to start at 10 a.m., or 1 week, the other week, it started at 11 o'clock p.m., or sorry, it's just 10 o'clock p.m. 1 week, it started at 11. Well, I had to work Saturday morning. I had to be in there at 6. I had to stand up at 1, 2 in the morning. I'm not a young guy anymore like I used to be. You know, I'm falling asleep. And I'm like, shit, that was a good fight on I wanted to see. Back in the day, when USA had it, or back when ESPN did it, it was Tuesday night, 9 to 11, and ESPN at the time was Thursday night, either 8 to 10 or 9 to 11. You were conditioned and you knew when to watch. If I go to watch a fight, I'm like, okay, the fight's going to be on at 9 tonight. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, they have poker on that's running late. Or they got, Little League softball, and they got a show on with 12 extra innings. Well, now I'm missing the fight, and then it's like, I get discouraged. I might turn something else on, or I might fall asleep. I don't see the fight. What's the best way to get behind a young fighter that's, you know, coming up is to see him when he's on, you know, TV, and you don't have to, you don't have to watch HBO. You don't have to watch Showtime. You don't have to own a pay-per-view. You can sit down and, you know, watch it on a Friday night, build a following behind his guy, then he becomes a big star on pay-per-view. You want to buy that fight.
And, you know, I think I can explain to you why some of this stuff happened. In terms of the season, you know, unfortunately, ESPN Friday Night Fights does not get the ratings that it does. I know a promoter who was literally told by someone important at ESPN, quote, "There are not enough Hispanics in your market. We can't have one of your shows." You know, that's a true story. If you notice, they do the Tecate commercial. ESPN
yes.
Friday Night Fights, Teddy Atlas, you know, he says his last piece before the end of the round in English. The Tecate commercial comes on. You're trying to hit your button. You think you have it in SAP. You don't. That commercial is only run in Spanish. You know, so they do have to target to a certain audience. And even that audience is not what it once was. That's why it's seasonal. You know, if ESPN Friday Night Fights got big ratings year-round, at the end of the day, it's a business. It'd be on year-round. In terms of the times and everything, I could explain that, you know, from understanding a little bit. If it's out west, let's say they're doing a show, you know, obviously they have to be on an undercard. I'm sure you've seen many of these fights where you have two random guys in the main event. You know, not to signal them out. For example, Artie Palullo from Philadelphia, he usually has Russian fighters in his main event who have no fans locally. So what he has to do to sell tickets, you know, he'll have guys on the undercard, and he has to, you know, start that undercard at a certain time to get those fans in there. Because obviously, with the time difference, if it's too early out there, people have work, they can't make it. Or if it's too late, sometimes the commission will stop the card, which happened once in New York. So that's why the timing is an important part of it, because, you know, the promoter has to start the card at a certain time and make sure to get the undercard bounced in.
Wow. That's a lot of information there to digest.
Yeah, that's too much. I was trying to explain the situation, because I remember one time there was a big stink. A local fighter from over here was actually supposed to fight after the main event. It was the same night when Darnell Wilson actually had that amazing knockout over Manuel Lodo. A local fighter named Nicky DeMarco was supposed to fight a four-rounder. He's a tremendous ticket seller. And they actually stopped the card. I don't know, you know, because there was an ambulance not there, or something with the commission pay, or, you know, they have all these people in the arena they have to pay overtime. There's just all these other factors. And I've even seen it happen on big cards before. So that's part of the reason with the timing, if that explains a little bit better.
You know, I got a question for you, because I was just hearing about this last week. I haven't been able to get to a lot of the local fights like I used to. Like last year when I was working, shit, the local fight car come up, I was there because I had nothing else to do. Now I'm at a new job where I can't get out of early, and I'm usually stuck there until 5-6 o'clock at night. Hard to get down to, you know, from Montgomeryville and Harleysville down to, you know, the Blue Horizon or the Arena or the National Guard Armory. But I was talking to Larry Turnhumby, the ring announcer, last week. We were at this Italian fest together. And he was telling me about the Blue Horizon card, where they were actually outside trying to, like, shut the building down in the middle of the card.
Yeah. I know what happened with that. If you're not sure what happened?
No.
But, basically what happened, I read an article on it. You know, I'm close to someone who's very involved with the Blue Horizon on basically a day-to-day basis. Now, what happened was, first, they didn't have a liquor license. They've been selling alcohol for a number of years. Supposedly, the building owner, Ms. Michael, was told that she had to get a license and never did. And also, she had a big amount of back taxes. So they actually let that card go on. And then after the card, they literally locked the building up. And supposedly, no one's heard from Ms. Michael since. You know, as of now, unless something has changed in the last couple of days, the Blue Horizon is shut down due to the issue with the back taxes, as well as the thing without having the liquor license. So that unfortunately shut down a great building for the time being that I would travel to from North Jersey, which is a pain of a trip whenever I can.
Yeah, because Larry told me that last week, and that's what they even told Verhoeke. They're like, listen, don't do one of your, you know, pre-middle fight speeches that you always get up in the ring to do. Don't do that. Just let's get this card rocking and rolling, because they're going to shut us down, you know, and hopefully let's just get the card in.
Anyway, Matt,
if you check out online, there's an article about it, but sorry, Bernard Fernandez wrote one on Philly.com, I believe.
You'll have to look at that.
Anyway, Matt, I want to give you a chance to talk about what you're doing. Give us an update about, you know, exactly how things are going with the boxing publicity and all that, and what kind of guys you got on your plate every day to deal with and talk to and promote.
Well, I mean, from a PR standpoint, I mean, I'm working with a lot of different guys. You know, I'm working with Alex Perez. He's got a fight tomorrow. He's going to be fighting on the co-main event in ESPN against Edvon Biles, a very tough Brazilian who does have a win in the hometown of a gentleman who won a 4-4 world title. Bobby Gunn, actually, yesterday, I've been working with him for a while. He actually just called out Randy Cash in Philly yesterday, hoping to fight in October. Worked with Mike Perez, who's fighting Saturday in Atlantic City on the Tua Barrett undercard. He's undefeated. He's on the Golden Boy. Mark TNT Tucker is out of Maryland, undefeated guy right now. You know, got a really good record, 14-0. I want to put that video up. Mark's a decent prospect. I mean, he's young. He's definitely going to continue to work, but I really like the way he fights. And I mean, I have a lot of other guys. I work with a number of prospects out of Baltimore here and there. And speaking of MMA, I'm far from a boat jumper, but I'm doing my first MMA show as well on the 31st of this month. Headline is going to be Jesse Nicolo, who's 20-2, he's a pro boxer, real gutsy guy, with a wrestling background. So he's having the second MMA fight, and supposedly the first card they drew very well. So the promoter, who also does boxing, is now in MMA as well. So
there you go, cross promoting, huh?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's some people that have done it before. From a promotional standpoint, if it makes dollars, it makes sense. MMA has a different demographic. Sometimes you get the upper class people who can spend more money and buy more tickets and, posters and stuff like that. And if you're getting that and you're bringing in sponsorships, which MMA always seems to have, it makes sense. And obviously, if those people aren't coming as much to see this guy in boxing, but you get him in a cage and you have a whole different group of people coming. So, that's really what happened with this case. And if he's going to, put him in a cage and making money, maybe he won't even return to the ring.
We had Butterbean on the show not too long ago, and he started his new United States circuit of this Mushin, based in Korea, this MMA circuit, and he did his first show in Worcester, Massachusetts, right near me here. So I went out there and met him and everything, and seen the Marius Pudzianowski versus Tim Sylvia, which was a junk fight, It wasn't very long or good, but Pudzianowski just really had nothing, He just gasped. Very quickly.
Did he fail the post-fight steroid test?
No, I mean, he was limping. I seen him limp right by me. He could have pushed him right over. He said he broke his foot later on. I didn't know that at the time. He was really limping. His whole freaking calf was just so red. I'd never seen anybody's legs that red. He's just totally gassed out. All the muscles just locked up after he tried to throw Tim a couple times and couldn't even lift him up.
There's a big difference between bench pressing like 800 pounds and fighting a guy who's a former UFC champion.
Yeah, but speaking of that, we got a big fight coming to Boston with James Toney. Talking a lot of smack, James Toney, of course, as always, against Randy Couture. So what do you think about that?
I think that it's a little bit of an embarrassment. I feel like Toney fell into a trap. It's basically Dana White, for lack of a word, better word, saying, screw you, we're going to bring someone from boxing, take him into MMA, and have him get beat up by Randy Couture. James Toney basically admitted that he's going to try to outbox Randy Couture. You can't outbox someone, and stylistically, the way James Toney fights, his little shoulder roll movements is going to get him taken down. I really don't think that he's going to do well in the cage. In terms of MMA, I think of a guy like Kermit Cintron, with a real strong wrestling background who can punch and being good in the sport. I feel like it's going to be a black eye for boxing. Everyone really knows what's going on, but I just feel like the fight's embarrassing, and James Toney, in essence, is being set up. It's not going to mean anything personally to me, but Dana White is doing it to prove a point, and that's why he put him in there. He put him in there against someone like that. When he put Kimbo in his first couple fights, he gave himself the opponent. They're putting James Toney, who has no street fighting and no MMA experience, against a Hall of Famer. Why is that?
Right. Well, it seemed like they kind of did the same thing to Chuck Liddell. They just kind of threw him to the wolves in his last few fights. And the only really easy fight they gave him was Wanderlei Silva. And that's the only fight he won. And it was a rough fight.
Fighting anymore.
Yeah. Well, he's going to fight. Everybody says he's not going to fight anymore. But Dana White's pretty much said, if he resigns, I'll accept it. But he's not saying that he's quitting. He's not going to quit because he's got to fight Tito. It's in the contract. I think that's written.
And that's a shame because he's lost 5 or 6 fights. Tito Ortiz hasn't heard from him in a while. So, if he fights Tito Ortiz and they do that on a pay-per-view, that's the same thing as like Hopkins Jones too. But, both guys are a little bit past, both guys are past their prime. One guy is completely out of it. So I really don't think that's going to be good for MMA at all.
And the thing I said a few weeks ago is I'm legitimately concerned for the guy's health because, fights keeping Lee by, maybe getting choked out or, armbarred or something. These are the things, fights that he was knocked unconscious, where he was laying flat on the mat for a couple of minutes, not moving. That's a serious concussion to the brain right there. And, you really can only take a few of those, and some guys catches up too faster. But the fact of the matter is,
you know, Chuck was always, like, not ever much of a takedown guy. He was always a guy that would throw hands, but he's slower, and he's taking punches now, and he's showing that he doesn't have a good chin. You know, that's it's a recipe for disaster out there.
He's going to go on steroids, then he's going to fight Tito, and it'll be a done deal. I actually read somewhere that the Nevada State Athletic Commission has really screwed the pooch on their testing of MMA fighters because they only do it during the after and pre-fight physicals. You know, they don't ever do it randomly, even though they have a policy in place that allows them to do it at any time in their training. They haven't once exercised that option, I heard. So that was kind of interesting, you know, because I always thought the UFC had all those fights in Nevada just because it's close to home. You know, that's where all their shit is based. But then, you know, I read that. I said, whoa, maybe there's something else to it.
Well, you also got to think about the casino fees, the huge casino fees they get from doing the shows there, much like they do with boxing.
Right. Anyway, it's just kind of interesting to me that, you know, everybody is hanging Chuck out to dry, but he's not realizing that it must be written in some contract somewhere that he has to fight Tito. You know, it's just it's written. You know, you can't just write yourself out of a contract. And Dana's never one to do that either, you know. I guarantee you he's never come out in public and said, yeah, Chuck is definitely going to retire. You know, I need him to retire. He has to retire. He wants him to retire. He can say that all he wants, but he's not going to say he has to retire. He's not going to throw him out of the UFC, even though he could at any day. Because he's just got too big of a name. And he knows he can sell tickets one last time. So he's going to use
him. Right, and he may need the money. You know, there's a guy I worked out with who came up with him. You know, he said that he had a lot of partying problems and obviously spent, you know, the money of a person who has a rich lifestyle. You know, let's say he doesn't have that much money. And I go back to that comparison with Jones and Hopkins, guys who've made millions in most of their fights. And, you know, you have Chuck Liddell, who might really not have that much money at all. He might be, you know, forced to fight. He may not have any other skills, which the person had talked about. And also from a marketability standpoint, Chuck Liddell isn't going to be doing all these commercials anymore because he's not a hot name right now. So this might all, you know, be the only way he can make money.
Good point. All right, well, tell us a little bit about Tarvis Sims before you go on us.
I started helping him out. He's a guy who's really looking for a shot. He's 25-1. Lost a fight to Alan Green on short notice when he, you know, had trouble making the weight and everything. And he's looking for a fight with Cali Pavlik. You know, they're talking about Pavlik fighting Chavez, which I don't think is going to happen. Pavlik likes to do these little pay-per-views, you know, where it's in his hometown, and he fights a guy with a record like that. You know, he wants to look at Tarvis as a guy who's 39 years old. They might say he hasn't fought the best competitions. He's starving for a fight like that. You know, he's 39 years old. He's been around a while, and he just wants one more shot, and that's really about it. You know, his brother was a world champion. Tarvis is a good boxer, so hopefully he'll be able to get a shot. You know, we'll see what we can do with him. He's promoted right now by Joe DiGuardi as well, so hopefully you guys can have him on in a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to give him a try. I guess he's not it's not definite. It's just he just shot it out there, so hopeful.
Yeah, you'll definitely be able to get him on sometime. If not now, pretty soon. I mean, he'll be a good guest. And if you want to bring his brother on as well, you know, his brother's another guy. I always thought he was a terrific fighter. Travis kind of got messed up in the politics a little bit following his lawsuit with Don King. He had one close controversial loss. He was never heard from again. If you remember, Travis Sims coming up, he's a terrific junior middleweight. And I think that, you know, he's a guy, if they give him another fight or two, he could get himself on HBO against a fighter like Angulo. I see no reason he can't.
He knocked out on that Don King pay-per-view card that time. He punched him with one left hook.
Alejandro Garcia, that was out of the clinch. That was a nice knockout. A lot of people were buzzing about that always a cheap knockout. But you know what? It's protect yourself all the time. And Garcia didn't protect himself.
Did the ref say break?
No, I don't think so. I think he was about to break, and he didn't. So.
And Garcia made a mistake. The referee did not say break. I remember watching. It was a beautiful left hook. Referee did not say break. And then, since you'll see guys who make this mistake, they will they'll go to pull out or they'll relax themselves when, you know, the act is still going on. And if you get hit like that, that is your fault. Here's another question before we let you go that I wanted to ask you. I asked Iceman and John Scully about this. And this is just an opinion for boxing fans. I really wanted to write this article, but my time has been so cramped lately. When we had that fight back in April, it was not a good fight between Hopkins and Jones. It was, it was definitely two guys well past their prime. But I think that even if they fought 8 or 10 years ago when they were both, you know, really like talking trash and trying to get the action on, it wouldn't have been a good fight because their styles didn't mesh, you know. Jones kind of like to be on the outside a little bit. Hopkins is more of a guy that was, more of like slick, especially later in his career, slick, cagey, you know, tricky and all that. But let's just, I'm just going to throw this out there, and I want to get your opinion on it. Okay, just imagine they both retire after April the 3rd, and they're both going to be first ballot Hall of Famers. Every year when they have a Hall of Fame, usually one guy gets the top billing. Imagine they go in on the same year as rivals. Who gets the top billing?
You know what? That's very hard for me to say. I'll put it out there. I'm a Roy Jones fan. However, I'm not biased. Now, Bernard Hopkins, every loss he's basically had has been really close besides Roy Jones a while back. You know, Roy Jones has been knocked out three times. You know, he's been knocked out violently by Antonio Tarver. He was knocked out violently by Glenn Johnson, and he was stopped by Danny Green, a fight that many people thought he should have won. You know, it really hung on too long, and it was obvious after that fight with John Ruiz, he was never the same after that. Going back down the way, you know, you kind of look at it from
right.
Who he fought and how he fought. I think you might have to say Bernard, you know, as I said, because one thing Bernard, about him is he never got beat up, and all of his losses were close. I mean, at 45, he can't do much anymore, you know, stylistically, and, you know, in terms of taking care of himself and being a smart fighter, he can hang with any of you guys. But however, if you look outside of that a little bit, in his heyday, Roy was a much bigger draw. Jones is eccentric.
Yep.
Jones had a type of offense that made people think he was like Michael Jordan in a boxing ring, and I feel like there was more of a demand for him. And as great as Bernard Hopkins was, you could look back at his career, which I have the utmost respect for, and no one can ever say, what a phenomenal fight. Bernard Hopkins put on a great fight. It was exciting. And this guy's a warrior. I mean, he's a great fighter, and he had a lot of great wins, but from an entertainment standpoint, you know, and in terms of people demanding to see him fight, it was never there like it was for Roy.
You know, and that's right. Like, the two things, I was going to write a pro and a con for both guys, and you pretty much hit all the points, because I was going to say the one thing, he had the longevity at middleweight, the 20 defenses, broke Carlos Monzon's record. And they were saying, like, a lot of the guys he fought were either blown up welterweights or they weren't good. No. He fought a lot of good fighters in there. Joe Lipsy was an undefeated contender. He blasted him out in four rounds. Glenn Johnson, who became a very good fighter, was undefeated at the time. He destroyed him. You know, he had Felix Trinidad. He was a 3-1 underdog versus Trinidad. So you can't say that the guy was a blown up welterweight. Hopkins was a major underdog, and he absolutely dominated Trinidad. But that was the thing. Bernard's style was, you know, he wasn't flashy when he went there. Like, Roy dominated a lot of fights, but he just looked so, you know, there was a lot of sparkle to it, you know. So even a fight that was one-sided, you know, it wasn't methodical. Well, Bernard was a little bit more methodical out there. You know, he picked his shots. Neither guy in their prime got hit much, but it was just the thing with Bernard was he wasn't as flashy out there. You know, he didn't, you know, excite people like Roy did. You know, he didn't put the hands behind the back and then throw a right hand. He didn't, you know, do the bolo, left hooks and all that. But then you got Roy, who, yeah, both of the guys held on too long. But then Roy had not just those three defeats you talked about, but also a bad defeat to Joe Calzaghe, where he went the distance, but he took a lot of punishment. And like you said, Bernard never cleanly lost the fight. I mean, I thought he won the first fight with Jermaine Taylor. I thought the second one was a draw. And he had, like, the fight with Winky Wright was close. The fight with Calzaghe was close. These were all close fights in there. He's never really dominated. But then at the same time, later in his career, he wasn't opening eyes like, wow. He was sitting there, he was more like winning because he was just so slick.
And you know what? One thing that bothers me, a lot of people tell me I'm crazy. I would love to see, and I still would like to see him face Chad Dawson. Everyone's saying, and Bernard's saying, you know, the money this, the money that. But isn't it a great storyline? You have the young lion who's desperate to become the biggest name of light heavyweight, has trouble drawing in his hometown, may not be the most exciting fighter, but is skilled. And Bernard's the old, you know, the old lion is saying, no, you're not taking this from me. I always wanted to see that fight. It never happened. I said the exact same thing about how Calzaghe would have loved to see him face Dawson and retire. And I'll add this before you guys get going. As a third guy, it looks like you back Hopkins. I admittedly back Jones. Regardless, I believe that Bernard Hopkins blew the rematch in the prime, that famous 60-40 argument. If you think about it, Roy Jones was the number one pound-for-pound fighter at that time. He was the guy HBO was backing. He was the bigger draw. He was the better fighter at that time, and he had a win over Hopkins. So he deserved that 60%. I think Bernard Hopkins' ego ultimately killed it. They both had big egos, but I feel like it was really Hopkins' fault, considering Jones had the cards at that point.
Right. Yeah, I think Hopkins' biggest argument going into that, which, and like I said, I still like can see where, yeah, I could see where, hey, for all that money, conceding 10% is not that big of a deal when you're talking about, you know, splitting 20-some million dollars, if not more. I think Hopkins' biggest argument at the time is when they were having that argument, it was on the heels of his knockout on Trinidad, because it was like the next fight. I was there when he fought, Carl Daniels at the Sovereign Center in Reading. I was there, because that's when they went on the split screen, because Jones was down in Miami going to fight Glenn Kelly. And they were arguing with each other. Hopkins was in the ring, Jones was in his dressing room. And Hopkins was coming off like, you know, I just knocked out, you know, Felix Trinidad. It was a big fight. It was a huge tournament. I won it. You know, we should go 50-50. And Jones was like, no, we should go 60-40. Well, they were both right and they were both wrong. You know, it's because at one point I remember Jones said it could be 70-30 and that would still be fair. And Hopkins really lost it on that. But, you know, like I said, when you get two egos like that, oh, man, sometimes, I mean, I think that's the whole problem with Pacquiao and Mayweather right now. Is, you know, Mayweather, I don't like his father, I don't like his uncle, I've said it 1,000 times. Floyd Jr., he's a genuinely nice guy. I've been on conference calls with him, I've heard him talk. But he's also a very cautious risk taker. He took a lot of risks in that Mosley fight, but they were all cautious risks.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I could see him right now, he's so protective looking. I think, honestly, style-wise, he would beat Pacquiao. I'd love to see Pacquiao win him, but I think style-wise, Mayweather's too good of a boxer.
After the last fight I saw against Mosley where he was hurt like that and he stifled him, you know, I believe it was for 10 rounds after that, I'm saying the same thing because he's never been figured out. You know, and that made me earn a lot of respect for Floyd. You know, he hasn't taken the biggest risk, and it's not just him. I'm not going to single him out. You know, boxing isn't what it used to be. You don't have... you know, Marvin Hagler taking on John Mugabe, a guy who's 26-0 with all knockouts. You don't have Ray Leonard coming off of a 2-year layoff, moving up in weight to fight the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. You know, that's just not the way boxing is. Guys aren't taking risks. I understand they have, you know, short shelf lives, but these guys used to be fighters, and now they're businessmen with gloves on. I wish that, you know, a guy like Paul Williams, I mean, I'd love to see him fight with Mayweather. You know, Mayweather's just going to say, oh, well, it doesn't make dollars, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of what's wrong with the sport, because a guy like Paul Williams has a style for him that he's never seen before. And you could say the same about Pacquiao. And, you know, there's a lot of fights where you could say this guy didn't fight this guy, but they're always looking out for the business first. Where back then, I felt like these guys were fighters and really fought anyone, a la Marvin Hagler. He never dealt anyone.
Paul Williams didn't look too good in his last fight, though.
Mayweather's never faced a southpaw like that. He throws so many punches. I think that Paul Williams is probably the toughest test, maybe even tougher than Pacquiao, because I have a feeling that Mayweather might figure out Pacquiao because Pacquiao's still there to be hit with plenty of jabs.
I used to be a fan, but not anymore. I saw that last fight, and I've seen a lot of weaknesses in his game.
Kermit's and Troy ain't a bad fighter, and you could argue that both of his losses came to a guy with illegal hand wraps. So if you look at it that way, Kermit and Troy never lost a fight.
I guess so. Leave it to Matt to get the statistics on me. I'll give you that one.
Would you like to see Mayweather versus Martinez? I thought about that, too. Speaking of old times, I put something up about that. Some people responded. Maybe have Mayweather versus Sergio Martinez at 155, Henry Armstrong style, at a catch weight for that middleweight title. I think that would be a cool storyline, too. But once again, that's another thing I don't think would happen because boxing doesn't seem to do that anymore, you know?
Right. All right. Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to or anything? Any final thoughts before we get to...
You know, I appreciate you guys having me on. I definitely want to come back on sometime, whether it's boxing, MMA, or just talking about local fights. You know, I love the form. Appreciate you having me on and everything. I just hope that a big fight comes off. You know, I'm going to say this, and I'm not going to try to go on a Larry Merchant tangent. You know, the big fights aren't about people like us who are going to watch whatever and might complain about that small pay-per-view and may end up ordering it anyway as a true boxing fan. The big fights are about people, you know, we know who may ask you about Mayweather versus Pacquiao, people who don't normally watch a sport that will come for a big fight like that. Now, if something stupid such as blood testing or a purse slip kills a fighter like that, and these people who don't normally watch boxing get excited for it and hear about it, they may laugh and think the sport is a joke. and stuff like that can kill boxing, and that's really all I have to say. Hopefully they can get everything together. Boxing could clean itself up a little bit. There's been some great fights. HBO's schedule's been a little bit better, but hopefully this mega fight could happen, and if Mayweather-Pacquiao all lives up to the boxing and MMA won't even be close to the same level.
Wow. That's his 2 cents, and you're sticking to it.
Hey, but it's right. That's the thing, if it's right.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, and the thing is, I always say, I'll say this on the show 1,000 times, I don't think boxing is a dying sport. I mean, it might not get the mainstream publicity. I mean, I'm lucky being in Philadelphia that we got a lot of local fight cards. Renard Fernandez does a great job, you know, doing his Tuesday write-ups in the Daily News, which I really enjoy. But why do these local fight cards, whether, maybe not anymore at the Blue Horizon, but at the arena, down at even the National Guard Armory. And I see places packed. And I'm not just talking about, as people say, boxing is an old man sport now. Only old people like it. Well, I don't consider myself old. And, I mean, I joke around sometimes, but I don't. And that's the thing. But I see kids there. I was there a year or two ago. We had a Rogers-Matagua fight. You know, Rogers is a good friend of mine. We were down there. He was fighting Thomas Altiera in the first fight. And there was a father and his son's best friend. And there were kids who were, like, 8 and 9 years old. And when the fights were over, Rogers came out, and he, you know, I had him wave to the kids and everything. And a couple other friends I knew were there, and they came and talked to these kids. And the guy emailed me a couple days later, and he goes, my son and his friend had such a good time, they can't wait to go to their next boxing match. And I see other people there, and I'm not talking about, like, guys. I see girls there, and I'm talking about young girls, you know, going out there either with their boyfriends and all. And they're cheering. They're having a good time. Boxing's not a dying sport. You just got to look at the right places.
Absolutely. And one thing, I guess I'm going to have to get my 10 cents and not my 2 cents. You know, people want to see boxing dying. I'll give another shout-out to two fighters, not because I've worked with them, just because it's the facts. You want to talk about the biggest person in the market. You know, Philadelphia is a great boxing city. You know, but you still have guys like Jimmy Rollins, you know, and I guess maybe football now is Deshaun Jackson. And hockey, whether it be Mike Richards or whoever, those are the big heroes. You go to Salisbury, Maryland, Fernando Guerrero is the man in that city. He gets 8,000 fans to see him fight. You know, he gets news coverage, pretty similar to Derek Jeter does in New York when he's fighting, and to a little bit of a smaller level, Mark TNT talking when he fights up in Eldersburg, Maryland. Those are two guys that have an entire community around them, and basically everything stops, and the entire community goes to see them fight. So that's an example right there about boxing not dying, even though some of these big fights, which may be in a casino, might not have that many people there.
Yeah, man, like I said, I have no argument to that against it. I mean, I agree 100%. Like I said, you know, and then you know, you said earlier, the day boxing dies is, you know, the day you die too. Well, you know, they'll be burying me right next to you.
All right. Well, Matt, it's been great having you on, and we'll definitely keep in touch. Keep sending us stuff about all your guys, and if you get any girls, too, let us know about those. So we like to, as you know, cover the female side of the sport as well. And just keep on doing what you're doing and keep the sport alive and do your MMA thing, too. I'd love to get you on and talk about MMA more. You seem to know a lot about that, too, so anytime.
Absolutely. You know, what we'll do is I'll try to bring on Jesse Nicolo sometimes. Sometimes he's 20-2 as a pro boxer. Most recently lost to Fernando Guerrero on Showbox. He's now 1-0 as an MMA fighter, so he's a guy who goes between both sports. Real tough guy. He'll be a good guest. And finally, I just want to tell everyone, I have my New Jersey boxing blog. I write about a lot of local New Jersey fighters who might not get the most press. That website is GardenStateFightScene.com. You guys can check that out as well. I'll most definitely be in touch with you guys. I appreciate you. I'll come on anytime.
All right.
Take care. All right, man. Sounds good.
See you later.
Got it. All right. Talk to you later.
Okay. Now,
one of my favorite guests, always.
Oh, yeah. Now we have Tarvis. Hopefully. He's a hopeful. Not definite. But if we don't get him now, we'll get him next week.
Yeah, that's cool.
Maybe next week. Possibly.
I
Well, you need some publicity. sorry. He's been texted. He should be fully aware.
I'm sorry. The person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Shit. Can you hear me?
Goodbye.
See you later.
Just like that? That's how we're getting.
Yeah, well, the voicemail box hasn't been set up yet. Here's what we'll do, Rich, because we only
time.
Got about, you know.
Let's try one more
we
time.
We only got about 40 minutes left.
The person you called has a voicemail box that has not been
great.
Set up yet.
Not been set up yet.
He definitely isn't.
It's hanging up on me. Here's what we'll do, Rich. You know, we'll finish out our show tonight. Like I said, we only got about 40 minutes. We still haven't gone over a lot of things yet. I've been busy ranting, as usual. And then we had Matt on, you know, he and I. We were both like, we had to call us the Caffeine Brothers or something, because, you know, me and him usually get hyped up.
Right.
I'm
surprised
yeah,
he stuck it out that long, because he said he had to be somewhere at 9. That's why he wanted us to call him at 8:30 sharp, but I guess when you
Okay. Well, you know, when he gets on with us, you know, I think talking to us, to like, especially, you know, a boxing fan talking to me, and I don't, more than anything, I mean, I know he's in the business side of it now, but more than anything, that man is a fan, you know. He reminds me a lot of, like, young Max Kellerman. When Kellerman first started out, he basically got his gig on ESPN just because he was a boxing fan, and he was more of a Rain Man than I was. And I get that same, you know, feeling out of Matt, you know. Loves the sport, you know, really gets into it, and, you know, that's just something he really, really appreciates, and really will go to bat for it every chance he gets.
Yeah, he's a very knowledgeable guy. I mean, I guess he's one of
the Well, you heard the one thing I said. You know, I couldn't remember the name of the guy that Sims knocked out when they were in the clinch. And I was like, I remember it was on a pay-per-view card, and I couldn't remember even what pay-per-view card it was. He's like, yeah, and he goes, and the guy made the mistake where he didn't protect himself at all times. I'm like, yes, it was not, the punch was not illegal. They were in a clinch. One thing you'll always hear me say is you get a lot, and I always tell this when I'm training people. You'll see two guys kind of boxing, and then they'll be in close, and they'll be fighting, and then they'll both kind of step out, almost like they're going to take a breather. And it's like, it's almost like an unwritten rule, like you don't hit the other person. That's bullshit. I will punch the guy right in the mouth. So that's why I always profess finishing off a combination with a double jab. You know, me and you're fighting inside, boom, 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 and you'll see me, I'll just stick out two jabs, boom, boom. You know, because that's like we're kind of stepping away from each other, but I'm getting a live punch in. And that, you know, there's just two good hard shots. If you go back and you watch my video against Jordan, you count how many times I hit him with a double jab coming out of fighting inside. And hey, it worked, because you can see, every time I did it, he would back up a little bit more, and he would kind of like drop his head a little bit, like, shit, I just got punched in the mouth again. And that's it's like an unwritten rule. But that's the thing, when Sims was fighting Alejandro Garcia, I think his name was, and like they were in a clinch, and like the other guy was about to break the clinch. Referee didn't say break yet. Well, you know what, shit, you're offering me a big fat softball over the center of the plate. Well, you know what? I'm going to hit a home run. And that's what Sims did. He hit a home run.
Yeah.
Very much a home run. Grand slam.
All right. Well, I'm going to go through the MMA fights coming up real quick
Before you do that, Rich, I got a couple things. I got a couple shout-outs I got to make. Got to make a shout-out to my boy Larry Tornandi, our favorite ring announcer. He came out to hang out with me at the Italian Festival last week. We had a good time. Photos been posted on the Facebook page. And, of course, I got to make a shout-out to my good friend Double T out there. She came out to the Italian Festival, too. She was acting up, and she wanted me to make sure I gave a shout-out tonight. So, Tony, there you go. And the best part of the night was they were having, like, these pig roasts there. They were bringing these large pigs out, and the guy's carving them up. So we were saying, like, something like she was touching the pig before he carved it. And the guy's like, do you want to eat part of the face? She was like, oh, I'm like, no, that's disgusting. I'm like, carve it up. I'll do it. So I got her part of the cheek with me. We got a picture on Facebook with each chunk of cheek meat hanging out of our mouths. So then somebody said something, and I took the eye dare. The guy's like, oh, cut the eye. You want to eat that? And she started getting nauseous. I said, yeah, I'll do it. Now, this poor girl is terrified of vomit, which I think is utterly hysterical. So I took the pig's eye, had it hanging out of my mouth. It was kind of chewy, but it was tasty. I ate the pig's eye. I turned to her, and I started going, ugh. That poor girl hit me and ran. It was actually kind of entertaining. But we had a good time. We had a good time at the festival. I also last week, Rich, you're a baseball fan, went to a Phillies game. You know how ordinary I get when they're losing. They're down 7-1 in the ninth inning, and I'm in a bad mood. They won the freaking game.
Nice.
Yeah. Only reason I stayed was because there were fireworks, and my whole family's here. They all wanted to see the fireworks. And I'm using foul language, and I was making fun of a midget. You know, typical stuff I do with games. And then they came back and won. So then I'm, like, dancing in the aisles and acting like a complete horse's ass. It was great. Now you can go on with your MMA.
All right. Well, we do have quite a bit to talk about here. We got stuff going on from tonight till the 22nd here. M1 Selection 2010 is going on Wednesday night in Moscow, Russia. That's the only one on the 22nd. That's the Eastern European Finals. And I guess Thursday night, next week when we're on, we're going to have to compete with Strike Force Challengers 9 from Comcast Arena and a whole bunch of other stuff. But we'll talk about that later. Anyway, we have we got a reality fighting event in Plymouth, Massachusetts this weekend. I did not know about. Maybe I'll have to go with that. Before that, we want to go to tonight's event is, of course, in Singapore, where nobody's ever going to be able to get a chance to get there in time. So we won't even talk about that one. Tomorrow night, we have Ladies' Night, Clash of the Titans 8 in Castle Rock, Colorado at the Douglas County Fairgrounds. And we also have Heat XC5 Punishment from Mayfield Trade Center in Edmonton, Alberta. Onslaught by XCC at the Sportsplex in Feasterville, Pennsylvania. Where the fuck is Feasterville there, Tony?
Feasterville actually is northeast outside the city. It's like right at the New Jersey border. If you were leaving like Philadelphia and instead of going like one route, which would take you more like to the west suburbs, this would take you like straight up the coast. Like east, you take 95 and just go straight up. It's like literally like right on the river.
Well, we also have a Global Fight League 8 going on in Dover Arena in Dover, New Hampshire. Elite Fight Night 11 from Penrith, South Wales, Australia on the 16th as well. And then we go to Sunday, and we have Piranha Brazil at the Curitiba Military Circle, the Arena Gold Fights. And we have Gladiator Challenge Patriots going on at the Red Hawk Casino on Saturday, actually. No, something there. I think I said Sunday. Anyway, also Saturday, Pre-Call Combat 2 from Brazil as well. King of the Cage Chain Reaction from Wisconsin at the Lake of Torches Casino. All or Nothing MMA Big Show from Florence, Indiana at the Belterra Casino Resort and Spa. Then we have Cage Supremacy at the Seneca Allegheny Casino and Hotel in New York, Salamanca, New York. And we have Ignition Reality Fighting from Plymouth Memorial Hall. I'll have to check that out. Let's see what's going on there. Impact FC2, The Uprising from Sydney in Sydney, Australia. I know we don't have any UFC events coming up until August 3rd, I believe, is the next one. Let's see, we got, that's on the 18th, so that's Sunday in Sydney, the Uprising. We have, of course, a bunch of stuff going on in Tokyo. We have SWAT 35 in Tokyo on Sunday. Striker 3 in Osaka, Japan. Heat 14 from Aichi, Japan. And also Long Beach Fight Night in California is having Long Beach Fight Night 9 at the Hall of Champions Gym in Long Beach on Sunday. And we go to Monday in Tokyo, The Way of Shuto 4, Like a Tiger, Like a Dragon. And then that's it for the week in MMA. So we have a whole 35 minutes to shoot the shit. And, of course, we have to mention our sponsors, as always. We have CageFX, we still do some promotion of them, or working with them. They have the big show coming up on August 14th. You can link on our main page there, discipline.com, discipline.com. Check those fellows out. They got some cool shirts.
And if you want to see our Ring Girl in one of them, check her out on the latest Ring Girl page on the website. And that's about it. Also, of course,
North Philadelphia suburbs and has nothing to do and wants to come help me pack for my vacation, I'd really appreciate it.
Sorry, but I'm busy, and I got a busted ankle, so won't be much help moving anything.
Yeah, you clumsy oaf.
Actually, just last week, you know, I was limping around the Boston area for a very special opportunity to have a little mini reunion with a couple of my college friends from Norwich. We were in the Corps of Cadets, so it was actually very interesting because I was having lunch with a Secret Service agent and an FBI agent at the same time, and I wasn't even in trouble.
Wow.
So I got friends in high places now. I thought that was kind of funny, but I was limping all over the place with those guys, and the FBI guy shows up, and he's just, like, in total casual gear, and my buddy from the Secret Service was like, I bet he's going to show up in a suit and sunglasses. But he didn't. And my friend from the Secret Service says they do a lot of work with those Nigerian scams in the emails, and somebody gave them $1.2 million that he had to tell that his money was gone. So that was just one of his worst days on the job, I guess, telling the guy his money was gone. Sorry,
hey, Rich, I just thought of something.
What?
Nobody called in to answer our question.
Oh.
So give me a shot to at least answer it.
All right, then we'll send you the shit. Fuck the callers.
Yeah, send me everything you want. I don't care. Well, I didn't get a few things to people anyway. Okay, here is my name. I didn't look this up either.
All right.
You said G, N, and C, right?
Right.
And it's not the General Nutrition Center?
No.
Okay. G, N, and C. I'm going to say Ghana, Nigeria, and Cameroon.
You're going all Africa team?
I don't know. Why not?
I think a lot of people over there listen to our radio show.
I think they love us. I think they love us.
That's interesting because they're nowhere close.
Okay.
I'll give you another one.
Okay, let me try again. I thought Africa would love us because I'm friends with Rogers and Tagua. I don't know. Okay, let me try again. Okay, so G, N, and C. I'm going to say the Netherlands,
close.
Canada.
Close.
And Guam.
Canada is one of them. You got Canada, okay?
The Netherlands?
That's your second try. This is going to be like a Price is Right game here. You got one on your second try. So you got the other two to get. One more get.
So Guam and the Netherlands were not right?
Guam and the Netherlands were wrong. The Netherlands was close. Close as far as region goes, but not correct. And Guam
was the I was like stretching to get Guam. Shit.
Think about languages. What languages would you take in school? Here's another clue.
Italian.
That one. That doesn't start with a G or an N, does it?
No, it does. Greece?
No. Do you take Greek in school? Come on.
You could have.
No, I would never take Greek in a language.
Do you think I got to start a language that starts with a G?
Yes.
Great Britain?
That's English.
I said Great British.
Nice try.
Well, G and N. What language are they taking from G and N? I mean.
Well, only one of them.
Okay, the languages you would take in school. Here's the languages you would take. Okay, if I remember high school, which I never paid much attention to, you would have Spanish. Well, Spanish is Jesus Christ, a bunch of countries. That all speak Spanish. Then you have French. I already said the French Indies?
No. I'm just going to now. I'll send you the stuff anyway because I just got to get it over with. It's Germany, Norway, and Canada.
Oh, God damn. I forgot about Germany. I was in the G. What the hell is in the G? Ghana?
Right.
Yeah, well, and you're right. You know, I wasn't focusing because I remember back when I was in college and I was being my normal piece of shit of myself. I'm in college, and I needed 4 semesters of a language for my major. And I said, shit, I'm taking Italian.
and I knew Italian was only offered in Italian 1 and Italian 2. And there was a bunch of people like that took Italian first semester as an elective, you know, just to do it for fun. One kind of ugly girl actually took it because she knew I was taking it, and she saw me at the boxing store the year before, and she wanted to have a class with me. She was kind of weird. But okay, so we'll forget about her. She was a psycho anyway. So I took Italian 1 with a bunch of other people. Then a few of us took Italian 2. Now, there's a tricky part. You got to take 3 and 4. I didn't have time to study abroad and take my 3 and 4. I mean, I had time to study broads, but not enough time to study in another country to get my Italian 3 and 4. So I'm like, shit, I got to take this. I got to get this language. So the professor was back, and he's like, if you can get, you know, 2 or 3 people, we'll do an independent study. And that way, you know, I'll teach 3 and 4. You just have to have the head of the department sign for it. I'm like, yeah, it should be no problem. So there's 3 of us that were trying to take it. And they voted me as the person to go talk to the guy, maybe because I was kind of big and kind of mean-looking and kind of ugly. So I'm like, shit, I'll go talk to him. So I go to this guy, Dr. Padal. And I was like, hi, I need you to sign this. There's 3 of us that want to take Italian 3 this semester. That way, we can get it for our major. And the guy looks at me, and he's kind of smug. And he's like, you need Italian 3? I'm like, yeah, we got, Mr. Graziani. He wasn't really a professor. He was just, you know, from Italy teaching us Italian. I'm like, Mr. Graziani said he'll teach us, you know, Italian 3 if we get your signature. He's like, you need this for your major. I said, yes, I do. I'm all annoyed. He goes, did you know you needed a 4 semesters of a language for your major when you signed up for Italian? I said, yes, I did, sir. He goes, well, in this university, we offer 4 semesters in Spanish, French, and German. Why didn't you take one of them? And I looked at him. I got a little annoyed. I had to show him the biggest arm in the world. I said, because I am not Spanish, I am not French, and I am not German. I am Italian. I am taking Italian. Now sign the paper so I can get my class registered. And the guy looked at me, and he signed the paper. He was going to get it up close to the back of my hand in about 10 seconds.
You buy this fucking car.
They all get positive, nonsensical nonsense.
They shove his face in the fucking hood and I say, you buy this fucking car. I kick tractor trailers on the highways and I pop wheelies. I'll fucking wrap a ratchet around your head. Frank Rizzo. All right, easy. All right. Well, the other big news this week is the retirement plan for the big guy in MMA other than Anderson Silva, which is George St. Pierre, known as GSP, is now detailing his retirement plan. He says he's going to basically try to beat Anderson Silva and become the number one pound-for-pound fighter, and then he's going to call it quits, possibly. You know, that's his goal, I guess. So he's got his sights set on that fight. And apparently from my talk with Matt Lindland, that's on fnu.mypodcast.com, he says that Chael Sonnen is ready to really take Anderson Silva apart in their fight there coming up on, I believe, August 3rd or 4th, whenever the next UFC show is. That's going to be their fight, I believe. So it should be interesting, you know. This guy is somebody that Matt's known since he was 15, I guess. He's trained with him, so if anybody knows him, it's him, being an MMA fighter himself with so much history. So anyway. Just something to think about and watch for. You heard it here first. Or you heard it if you listened to the Matt Lindland interview first. You're there. But anyway, we're looking forward to that. We posted a really funny video with James Toney on the website. I don't know if you got to see it, Tony, but
hello, everybody. I'm
it's pretty
Steve
good because I guess.
Friday night.
Sorry, Steve. Anyway, it was yesterday the guy Ariel Helwani from Fan House interviewing Tony, and he was very persistent. I mean, he like followed him around the press room. I guess it was at UFC 116 there, and followed him all around the room, and finally got a hold of him and interviewed him. And then James tried to walk away again, and he went and walked over to him and sat down next to him. And Tony's of course running his mouth about MMA and boxing and the whole debate. And he was doing well, selling it, you know. It's one thing that MMA doesn't really do a lot of, you know. They do the very serious, like, cameo type things where, you know, they do the setups for the fight and they interview the guys. But, you know, the real drama only comes when they have the Ultimate Fighter show, when the coaches are, like, you know, getting in each other's face and stuff. And, you know, you don't see a lot of that in the way the boxing does it so well and has done it so well over the years, where they, you know, do the press conferences and they have the real personal stuff going back and forth and just people at each other's throats and stuff. And whether it's real or not, gets you into it. So James knows how to sell a fight like that, a little bit like Floyd. But James is bigger. He's got a bigger mouth, I think. But anyway, he had the action figure of Randy Couture that was in a dress. So he's carrying that around to inspire people and, you know, to make fun of Randy, obviously. But obviously he's going to be in for a serious fight. But number one, he's a much bigger guy than Randy Couture, so you can't count him out for that. And he also can throw bombs, so you got to give him a puncher's chance. But I think Matt is right in saying that, you know, he's not ready for the takedowns, and we'll have to see if Randy can take it out. You know, but I think everybody that's expecting it to be quick, and him being on the losing end, if it's quick, I doubt that. If it's going to be going over a round, I think he's going to lose. But if it's quick, I think he's going to win. If it's quick, it's going to be like a freaking Ray Mercer type of quick. One punch and it shocks the world, you know, who knows. But, you know, I'm the same guy that gave Puchinowski a chance, and Butterbean just ripped him to shreds this past week. I don't know if you saw that. But that was another story in the blog. But we actually just kind of mentioned James Toney a little bit with Matt. What are your thoughts on that? You didn't really get into that.
Well, I remember what Matt was talking. Matt said kind of the same things that I agree with. I mean, James Toney was a tremendous, tremendous boxer. But there were certain guys that would be able to make that transition to mixed martial arts. And I'm going to give a prime example of a guy that I think in his prime could have made the transition. It was Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was so fast and it's so hard to sit next to him. Imagine
him. He broke
him
in a street fight, right?
What?
He broke some guy's arm in a street fight.
Oh, I remember he smashed Mitch Green's face in a street fight.
He broke his arm.
That's the thing about Tyson, man. It was, Tyson would knock your head off in 10-ounce gloves. Imagine putting him in 4-ounce gloves and managing to get him so fast. So devastating. Tyson was an offensive fighter. He would have been able to have some success just because how explosive he was. I mean, he would have put Chuck Liddell on fucking Dream Street in 30 seconds because Liddell was so wide with his punches and Tyson was so compact. A guy who would not do good in an MMA type of environment are guys that are defensive counterpunchers. I can't see Bernard Hopkins. I could see Roy Jones doing better than Bernard Hopkins in an MMA, because Jones was more from the outside and could strike quick with punches. Hopkins is more of a rolling counter type of guy.
More than anything is Cintron, because he's got the wrestling background. He was a very good
Cintron recruiter. Would do good because, once again, he is a offensive type fighter. A guy like Floyd Mayweather would not do so good because Floyd is fast, but he is more like defensive, counter, and, you know, use speed and boxing. I can't see James Toney having good success because James is a guy that likes to get in real close with you, use his shoulders to, like, kind of, like, roll off, use a shoulder roll, come back with uppercuts and right hands, but he likes to fight in close. If you watch any mixed martial arts, and I admit that I don't watch a whole lot, but when the guys are in stand-up mode, when they're standing up, look at the Lesnar fight from a couple weeks ago when him and Carwin were both standing up. There was a lot of distance between them. They weren't fighting in close for the fear that, you know, a guy could, you know, do a takedown or, you know, go for a chokehold or whatever. They wanted to do their punching from distance. James is a guy that likes to fight in close. He likes to go shoulder to shoulder, chest to chest, you know, roll off, hit little shots, get counter punches in there, little uppercuts. That will not work
in a mixed martial arts type of fighting. It's too easy to get caught in an armbar, too easy to get caught in a takedown, too easy to get caught in a chokehold. I mean, he's not going to get hit with a lot of punches, but the thing is, he's going to get taken down. That's going to be his business.
It depends on where it goes. You know, it's like any fight in MMA. It depends on where it goes. If it stays standing up, Randy Couture is a very good boxer. Who knows if he doesn't try to be a boxer and really prove a point? Like, I can outbox you. Not only out MMA you, I can outbox you. And he steps up and he gets caught. You know, that's a possibility because he is one of the best boxers in MMA. I think actually the primary reason why they picked these two to go at each other is because of their age. I mean, I don't know how old Tony is, but I know Randy Couture is over 45. You know, so.
And Peter Jamie's got to be about 42.
Yeah, so they're both in their 40s, and I mean two guys that are probably in great shape for their age, but you know, obviously they're matched for that reason. So I think it could be a little bit more interesting than people think, you know. And I actually thought that the Pujanowski fight, even though I thought Pujanowski had a shot at winning, was a little bit more interesting than people were going to think it was, too, after it happened. You know, because it went into the second round, you know. A lot of people thought it was just going to be over real quick, but it wasn't. You know, so you can't underestimate anybody just because they're in a different, coming from a different sport. I mean, I think I didn't mention this the last time we got into this discussion, but the thing about it is, do you ever hear people discriminate somebody that's coming up from like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu background or a karate background and gets into MMA? You know, you had all these people talking about Machida was the next greatest gift to the whole league when he came up because of his excellent karate, but you know, he got outpaced. You know, but people were still talking about karate all over the place because of that. But you got a guy that comes along who just has some boxing experience, maybe a little bit of street fighting, and they just dismiss him, you know. But that's just a BJJ. If the guy's just a BJJ expert or a karate expert, and that's all he has, you know, he can't succeed either, you know. So who knows? But I think, I don't think he's going to win necessarily, but I think he can win, and I think a lot of people are just selling him short, saying there's no way he's going to win, so... I just want to put that possibility out there. Don't be surprised if it happens. You know, Ray Mercer wasn't a very good example, but he did it. He knocked out Tim Sylvia. So one shot, one kill. Sometimes that's all it takes. But anyway, that's coming up, I think, on the 20th of August. So it's going to be in Boston, and I'm going to try to make it there. I don't know if I'll be there, but I'll have to buy tickets maybe. I'm going to get some of my settlement money before then, so I doubt I'll get press passes. Who knows? Maybe I'll make that part of the settlement. Really. Like, yeah, we can put some press passes, because I know Zions has some. But anyway, you got any last thoughts? I don't want to cut out early here. We've got only like 16 minutes left here.
Yeah, I got a pack. That's my last thought. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a short vacation, leaving like 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. I just got my new Ring magazine today, so I'm a little bit excited about that. I got my MP3 player, so it should be a good bus ride home, ride there.
I have the music to start the show all the time. Well, I had it playing the other day, and it's on a loop, you know. It just goes from one song to the next. And of course, you know, from experience, I always have technical difficulties to my computer. It's got a mind of its own sometimes, but I had a problem, not so much anymore, but the last few days I guess I fixed it, but before I used to have this problem where my computer would just shut down automatically, you know, just no warning, just boom, shut down, and I'll be like right in the middle of something, right? So the other day I'm actually leaving my room to go make lunch or whatever. And what song is on the radio but the guy in the rap song singing, "Dr. Goal, y'all, and I'm letting you know." And as soon as that verse comes out, those very words, "I'm about to go and I'm letting you know," my computer fucking shut down automatically. And I'm like, what are the odds?
Yeah, right, I know.
100 songs circulating through that thing. My computer just told me it was about to shut down.
My computer, I mean, I got to really get more repair work done on this thing. Because I got football season starting in like 2 months. I run, not even, about 6 weeks early, I run the Ultimate Football Pool. I used to run through my old job. Now I just run, you know, just
for the sake of running it. And I'm like, well, I got to run my spreadsheets and all that. Well, the way this computer's set up now, it's really piece of shit out on me. And I'm like, I got to figure something out. I got to get this thing repaired. I mean, I got it functioning right now, but not at the optimal level I'm going to need for this pool. And so I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, I got to get the appointment for the guy to come up and fix it. I'm like, all right, I'll get that done. But that's driving me a little bit nuts. See, what kills me is I download a lot of music, and sometimes I always do it, like, the free variety, and sometimes I get viruses by doing it, and it completely fucks my system. But, you know, I just like doing it. I was making a CD last night of just some old-school, like, slower hip-hop songs, you know, like a lot of R&B stuff, Boyz II Men and stuff like that, you know, stuff like when I'm on the plane tomorrow, I can relax while my aunt and my mom and they're babbling, you know, I can sit down and just relax a little bit.
Well, enjoy your trip, and we will see you next week, right? You're not going to be gone that long.
Oh, absolutely. I'll be back by Sunday. I'm flying out Friday, going to hang out in Chicago Friday afternoon, Friday evening, check out the town a little bit, get a couple roast beef sandwiches that I saw. There's a place with Al's Italian Roast Beef. They showed it on the Food Network where they take the sandwiches, they dunk them in the juice, and it's really good. I'm going to get a couple of them. I'm going to get some deep dish pizza. I'm going to slap around a few Blackhawks fans. So the food's getting their ass kicked tonight. And I don't know how they're going to be tomorrow because they got Joe Blanton pitching. He hasn't been pitching well lately. But Saturday, we got Cole Hamels, who MVP of the 2008 World Series, pitching, knock on wood, relatively well. And then Sunday, I'm going to miss some Roy Halladay. I know you know who he is.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good. You know, when I get my little chunk of change, I'll have to make a road trip down there, maybe in time for the first Eagles game or something at home. And,
absolutely, man. You come to a game with us.
Cheesesteak. Real Philly's cheesesteak. Not one from
a I'll take a good place to get real Philly cheesesteak. I'll tell you another thing, man. You tailgate with us at an Eagles game. I mean, I don't get to do as many things as I used to, like a lot of my boys and everything. You know, they're season ticket holders. I'm not. And it's hard for me to get, you know, tickets for some games. And the traveling, all, it's not easy because we make a whole day affair out of it. And but when we cook, I mean, we cook in there. I mean, we've actually deep-fried turkeys on the spot. We've done that. We've done some other things in Chelsea stuff with an onion. We've actually made crab legs down there. I mean, messy as shit, but good. We do a lot, you know.
Well, it should be fun. And didn't really get to see too much of Philadelphia the first time I went through there.
Yeah, that station definitely did not cut it.
Nope.
Gotta run the Art Museum steps and get a cheesesteak.
Yeah, I didn't even do that. I didn't see the Art Museum. You see the Rocky statue. It's way too far away.
Yeah, you're going to be able to see it when you're at a bus station. Then you got to get a shot class.
All right, TP. Thanks for telling me the Beavis and Butthead are coming back, too.
I know. I was going to mention that. I saw you made a comment. I'm very excited. Beavis and Butthead are coming back, baby.
Nice.
Great show of all time. Educational. Informative.
Right, well, until next week, we're signing off a little early here. And everybody in Germany, Norway, and Canada listening to us.
Yeah. And Ghana, Nigeria, and Cameroon.
They're on the list somewhere, I bet. But the Nigerians are too busy sending scam emails to listen to us. And
yeah, I know.
Website.
They got $12 million in a bank somewhere.
Bank presidents with Yahoo addresses, you know. Very sophisticated.
So.
All right. Have a good trip. And thanks, right, everybody, for stopping by.
All right, see you later. Tornado's out.